As has been said, their meeting was held on January 27 at the W.T. Stead Library in Westminster, the hostess being Miss Estelle Stead, the group consisting of Lady Conan Doyle and her two sons, three friends of the family, the messenger from France, minus two and her husband. Conditions were not as good as might have been hoped. There was a certain strain, due possibly to the large number of people present, or possibly to the great power which seemed to be focused on the group. Minus two entered, crossed the room and seated herself. At once M. Botive arose and crossed over to her. "Neither had met before," he said. "Yes, I know you. We have worked together long, long ago. That was in former lives in ancient Egypt. See, I have brought you this little star. It has been sent to you by the wise ones for you to wear." He pinned it onto her dress, made a gesture of blessing and protection, and returned to his seat. Chapter 6. The 9-9-9-day and ITS outcome our American adventure. At this stage it will be of interest to know what manner of man this messenger was. He is not easy to describe. Someone who once met him by appointment at a London tube station during the rush hour said that he stood out among the crowds like an eagle among pigeons. This is true, but to say why is not so easy. He was, perhaps, slightly under average height, about 40 years old, with a mass of hair so dark as to be black, dark penetrating eyes, strongly marked features which when he was touched could soften to an almost Christ-like expression, yet when he was stirred to anger he looked formidable indeed. His English was of the sketchiest, so that it needed some concentration to follow him. Yet such was the power of the man that he seemed to drive home his meaning, and that meaning was always something very well worth listening to. In all he was a man of mystery, an Italian by birth, and had been with the mage one of the founders of the Polares. His love and respect for his chief, the Chevalier Rose, Croix in the East was profound, and he lived to further his chief's cause and that of the Polares. He accorded to White Eagle almost a like respect, seeming to recognize thus early wisdom in him and power of love, which in later years have been made manifest to a great number of people. M. Botiva paid many visits to this country during the Conan Doyle work, often crossing and arriving in London without notice by the customary letter or telegram. Mine Esther, however, was nearly always aware when he had reached this country, saying that she could even smell the particular brand of cigarette he smoked. Page 35. What brought him over to Britain in the first place? Here we must turn to a message from their master which appeared in the Polar Bulletin. Arthur Conan Doyle has appeared to us, to the sages, and among the many interesting things of which he spoke was his decision to interest himself in and help the Polar group. Before his death he had promised his friends to give proofs and manifestations of the afterlife. 2 day he let us know, through his communication with the Chevalier Rose, Croix, that he will hold to his promise. But not yet, for the spirit of Sir Arthur still waits in his beautiful Scotland for the time of the meeting of the red and violet rays. This meeting alone will enable him to speak to his friends. Those who would help Sir Arthur should use a dark red light when they meet, and especially on this special day. The medium chosen must carry a 6-pointed star to give her the necessary strength. When Minest read this she naturally asked for an explanation. His own particular mission, M. Botiva then said, was to help Sir Arthur to give his message and his proof of identity to the world. Before Sir Arthur could speak with knowledge and authority he must be shown, or even traverse, a wide range of the heavenly kingdom. When the average man dies his soul is held within the astral world for a long time, a world which is still close to this world, and is still material although composed of a finer matter than this. The soul of Arthur Conan Doyle differed from most souls because it had incarnated under certain earth rays of great power and significance. No common destiny lay before such a soul once it was able to assert itself. The gripping power of those rays had remained unbroken by his death, that was why it was necessary, according to instructions received from the sages, for Minus II and Sir Arthur's family to go to Edinburgh, where Arthur Conan Doyle was born, to hold there a special meeting on May 22nd, the day of his birth. By this means, in conjunction with the red and the violet, for which read the rays of the time of his birth, and the place of his birth, the soul of Arthur Conan Doyle could be set free from its astral imitations. M. Botiver continued, "We know Sir Arthur in France. Page 37. He loved our country and its people. We too know what manner of man he is. The Polaires call him the Great Brother and think of him as such. Nevertheless, no one can escape his destiny, no matter how great, how strong, how good he be. Not even Christ could escape his cross." Mynester pondered these matters for a long time afterwards, as well as the fact that M. Botiver had said that Sir Arthur earnestly desired to re-state the case for spiritualism, that he wanted to correct many of the beliefs to which he had formerly subscribed in the light of what he had himself experienced after his passing, and began to realize that this contact of hers with his family, with the Polaires and their messenger, with the Chevalier Rose, Croix on the inner plains, was but the preliminary of a major work to come. It must be made clear that these talks with them. Botiver followed the meeting held at the Stead Library on January 27 when he and Mynester first met. This account of that meeting is taken from Your Kingdom Come. The group waited until the white light in the small chapel was switched off, the ruby light switched on. The hour which followed stands out and is not likely to be forgotten. By my side sat the medium, on my left was Mrs. Telstead. The red glow fell on the earnest and reverent faces around the circle as the guide White Eagle rose. Few can realize without sight or hearing the wonderful transformation and dignity which comes upon his medium, the deep measured voice with which White Eagle speaks, his tenderness and humanity. On the table before me is M. Botiver's account of what followed, as recorded in the Polaire Bulletin. The account reads, "The meeting was strictly private. The medium was a Mrs. Grace Cook, well known to English spiritualists. She wore a silver star, symbol of our fraternity, and the room was lit by a deep red light. She went into a trance almost immediately. She then rose, crossed the room, and in a masculine voice recognized by several present as that of her guide, White Eagle, began a long conversation with Lady Doyle and her two sons, Sir Arthur speaking. Through the mediumship of White Eagle. On such occasions the guide speaks on behalf of some other spirit, he being the more practiced communicator. We shall not repeat the long conversation which ensued here, for it was strictly personal. After nearly an hour, however, the medium rose again. With closed eyes and a firm step she approached Zembo Tiver, writes of himself in the third person saying, "There is a gentleman here whom I have not known during my earth life, but with whom I am now linked in view of a common work." The medium stopped in front of our brother, held out her hand and a joyful, "Manly I am glad to meet you" rang through the room. A long and low-pitched conversation then took place between the dead and the living. Conan Doyle made himself known to Zembo Tiver as brother, and then, turning again to those present, proceeded to speak of the Polaires as a group destined to help in the moulding of the future of the world. For the times are near. He then said, turning again to Zembo Tiver, "I must speak with you again in 6 days' time. I have some important matters to communicate to you. The work, to which I can set no limit, begins." It was thus that a man whom the world calls dead made an appointment with Zembo Tiver. When Mynester returned home on that night she felt somewhat disturbed on account of the unusual nature of what had happened. She then received the following instruction from White Eagle: "This man, Zembo Tiver, has an important part to play. He is our servant. No harm will come if you give yourself to our work. Great effects will eventually result from this first contact, and these will be widely felt and will presently shatter the doubts of the many who cannot believe in the life of the spirit. As yet there are many conflicting interests which may hinder the work. This messenger is sent because of instructions from Tibet, and he who sent the message knows of you from there." The account of the second meeting with the messenger 6 days later is again from the Polaire Bulletin. The group consisted of four people. The guide of the medium again takes control and speaks in the same manly voice. The room is lighted with a deep red light, and the medium wears the tiny six-pointed star. White Eagle, I speak of one whom I shall call Noble Heart, as has been said. White Eagle often bestows a name indicative of the character or soul of the person concerned, known to you as Arthur Conan Doyle. He now recognizes that his passing was for a far greater purpose than the ordinary mind can realize. He is to be used to bring to the earth fresh truths and light. Instructions were sent to Paris to this brother so that he might be directed to the medium through whom he could speak. Conan Doyle holds out his hand to you in brotherly love. He is ready to help your brotherhood. His name is a power in this country, if it be a power for good, take and use it for good. The report goes on, another communicator takes the place of White Eagle. The voice changes, it would appear that Zedbin now believed the speaker to be no other than the Chevalier Sage, but hesitates to say so directly. Conan Doyle and the Wise Knight are now in harmony and brotherly love. Conan Doyle is a great spirit now released from the flesh, and so will be able to serve in all spheres of life. Reach to his soul if you would contact his true spirit. Only in the impersonal spiritual power can you receive divine inspiration to forward your work, and indeed the personal must become divine. See, the star rises in the east, it is the sign of the polares, the sign of the two equilateral triangles. Then followed details about the years of fire or disasters drawing near to mankind, details which are withheld, coupled with an appeal for friendship between France and Britain, for the link is now made. The account continues, we do not comment on these two meetings. The polares hold no dogmas, but have a deep respect for all the faiths and beliefs of man. We have summarized and have reported as faithfully as possible the two meetings which took place, and can only say that according to the communications of the sages received through the Oracle of the Force Astral, Sir Arthur spoke to us through the mediumship of White Eagle. Page 40. Regarding these meetings, it must be distinctly understood at the outset that neither the medium nor her husband knew anything about the Polaire organization, nor of what it sought to accomplish in London. We went to London to obtain certain definite evidence, and employed every safeguard to guarantee that evidence. Moreover, the wise ones informed us that at the end of the second meeting the medium would give direct proof that she was in communication with our chiefs. When she awoke from trance she told M. Botiva that she saw a lofty mountain and a man with a luminous dark face who held out to her a six-pointed star. Here was the proof for which we had waited. Here ends the polar account of what must have been a notable display of knowledge on the part of White Eagle, such knowledge being entirely unknown to the medium and her husband, who had acted as recorded during the two meetings. Together with this account of the meeting of ZB with Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, a facsimile of a letter from Lady Conan Doyle appeared in the Bulletin des Polaires. Even after the lapse of years, it is worth reproducing this letter, not only because of its intrinsic interest but because it affirms the recognition of Sir Arthur as the communicator by the one person whose confirmation was most valuable and who could speak with the most authority. Another factor which increased the bewilderment of these two was that, unknown to themselves, they were being brought under the ray or projection of a special polar group in Paris which had been detailed to help Arthur Conan Doyle in his mission. This group sat for months at regular intervals to project a ray illuminating both Sir Arthur and his medium. It must always be understood that in their work the polares were forbidden by their chiefs to constrain or overrule the free will of any man. They must not attempt to dominate, impose or influence anyone to adopt or follow any particular line of conduct, however admirable it might seem to other people. To illumine a soul, for this brotherhood was working with its own soul, power and not with minds or bodies, and thereby to help it to recognize and follow the light within itself was to practice a white magic. To attempt in any way to overrule the volition of that soul was a form of black magic bearing terrible penalties in this life and the next. No pains were spared to make this crystal clear to every polar. May it be as plainly expressed in this book. Only the recipients of this ray of illumination are in a position to testify to its reality and power. Here -2 and her husband were in a peculiarly favorable position, since both now wore the little polar star which formed a link or point of contact, and both were sensitive enough to be receptive to the polar ray. It is no easy matter to describe their reactions. We have all seen an actor on a darkened stage picked out by a spotlight. That is how it felt to these two. They were picked out, something was reaching them, something which was affecting them during the weeks and months that followed, and which was greatly helpful in its influence. Some readers will doubtless want to know why such an advanced soul as that of Arthur Conan Doyle should suffer any limitation after death. They will argue that his years of devotion to good causes, his stalwart championship of right against wrong on all possible occasions, his sacrifice of income, time, strength and even life itself in the cause of spiritualism, should have set him free. Yes, this is a sound argument. But here is another line of thought. Most of us can presumably do one or two things pretty well either with hands or head or even with both. The achievement of most of us is small. Indeed, how many of us can excel at any one separate thing? Very few, but here and there someone achieves it. This does not necessarily refer to a spiritual genius such as a Jesus, but to some ordinary man, living in our midst, immersed in the daily round and common task, but doing everything better than other people. One has to read more than one biography of the man Doyle to gain appreciation of all that he was and did. In almost everything he touched, no matter whether he followed a beaten trail or became a pioneer, as with the Sherlock Holmes saga, or with a new sport such as skiing, he excelled. If his physical size was phenomenal, so was the scope of his interests and accomplishments. Page 43. Now it so happens that man can only excel when he devotedly and passionately desires to do so. To excel at many things, sports, writing books, or crusading in this, that or the other direction on behalf of many a cause, a passion of devotion must be given to all. This means that the soul of the doer is bound up with all that it does. If the inclination of its interests is heavenly, it becomes a saint or seer, if earthly, then it ties itself down to earth. Some folk live out their lives only a quarter or a half conscious, so that many valuable and interesting things escape their notice. Rarely does one meet anyone 100, percent alive with fire and energy. This may arise because, as occultists say, the majority of us do not incarnate in full. A portion of our soul stays behind in the invisible world from which we come, to call us back again home when we lay down our burden here at death, so that anyone who incarnates his whole self has some difficulty at first in breaking his earthly ties when his time comes. This is as it may be. What this line of thought may make clear is that if Arthur Conan Doyle was one of these, then his service to spiritualism, noble and selfless as it was, did not differ largely from his other material interests. His task was always to try to convince hard-headed worldly people of the reality of survival by producing substantial evidence of an afterlife. He largely devoted himself to the search for such evidence rather than to the spiritual and religious significance of these matters, so that even his spiritualism in some degree ranked among his material interests. I now show you a symbol. I want to build on a square of 4 for the future work. You will find that the revelation which has been promised will deal not only with the life, beyond death, but with the coming of the Christ Spirit, and this in years to come will bring a very definite change, a revival of the Spirit in men's thoughts and literature. So also will the governments of the nations be someday directed from the Spirit. The curtain which now shrouds men and women from the truth, from the incoming light, will be rent, and illumination will dawn so brightly that men will see differently, will see truth truly. That is enough. Reflect well. I cannot impress you sufficiently with the significance of the words spoken tonight. The idea of building on a square of 4 will be familiar to all Freemasons. It so happened that all the sitters, -2 and Mrs. Caird included, were Masons, as was Arthur Conan Doyle. It also happened that the group finally decided that 4 members made the ideal number, members of the Conan Doyle family and M. Boat either being only occasional visitors. one more significant incident to close this chapter. In the month of April, 1931, a photograph was published in the London News Chronicle of a message written on a photographic plate in Sir Arthur S.'s own unmistakable handwriting and signed by himself. It read, "My dear all of you, I have greatly looked forward to this, but I cannot come in contact as I ought. The lies my difficulty. My greetings to you all. You are indeed doing God's work. Arthur Conan Doyle." This photograph was obtained through the mediumship of Mr. William Hope of Crewe, a most trustworthy photographic medium, who obtained many of his results by merely holding an unopened packet of photographic plates between his hands, or else by exposing in his camera a marked plate which had been taken from a new packet by someone who had marked it and who oversaw everything which subsequently happened to that plate, so that there was no possibility of mistake or fraud. What lends this incident value is that it provides a completely independent proof or corroboration of the message of the force astral, "I cannot come in contact as I ought. The lies my difficulty." These words substantiate the polar message. Chapter 8. The New Man in a Renewed World. When this fateful meeting took place on May 22, 1931, Minister had been on the spiritualist platform for some 18 years. Not every exponent of spiritualism stays the course so long. By then she was a superb natural clairvoyant, whose messages from and descriptions of people in the spirit world went home with hardly an exception. For years, as has been said, she had been working in spiritualist churches, a heavy task and duty taken in conjunction with the claims of home and family. Having become so immersed in the movement, she had little time for matters outside her home and work. Her interest in, say, theosophy and occultism, for example, was only tepid, she having commenced one or two books on these subjects and laid them aside. Much the same applied, must it be confessed, to the writings of Arthur Conan Doyle, of which she had read one book only. We have therefore to see her in our mind's eye as a person making use to the full extent of her strength and the special powers with which she had been endowed, in the belief that her most important mission was to succor the bereaved and comfort the heavy-hearted. She did this through spiritualism, which at that time, it must be remembered, was a progressive and lively movement, getting a considerable and not always unsympathetic publicity in the press, and claiming as advocates a host of men and women prominent in science, on the stage, in literature, at the bar, and in many other walks of life. Having no knowledge of occultism or theosophy or their literature, her own mind could not intrude on the communications which were to come. The channel prepared for Arthur Conan Doyle's message was, therefore, free from preconceived ideas. This, being important, should be borne in mind by the reader, as should another important matter, this being how strongly the mind and personality of Arthur Conan Doyle came through in his written work, and in his public speaking. The generation in which his name was a household word is passing, and a succeeding generation may be unfamiliar with his charm of style and expression. The present writer always found this magical — magical is not too strong a word. Conan Doyle always wrote in plain English, the plainer and simpler the better, making no use of sharply novel or emphatic words or phrasing in order to jolt his reader to attention, as did, say, Robert Louis Stevenson. He had no need, subtly, or magically. His writing reached out and won attention with his first sentence and held it to the end. How this came about is difficult to define, but certainly it succeeded. Perhaps it was because the nature of the man himself permeated his writing in no common degree. The love of romance in him held us until the book ended. He was someone, we felt as we read on, patently sincere and honest, whom it would be good to know because we felt we wanted to know him. We gladly made his acquaintance through his books, finding there a sturdy good sense and right feeling which again was good to encounter, and lastly we felt he was British through and through with the best of Britain. And so his books came as a breath of home. These are some of the reasons why the word magical was made use of in the first place. Why is all this written after this lapse of time? Because when Your Kingdom Come was first published, everyone was familiar with the Conan Doyle books and with their author. As has been said, his was a peculiarly individual style, or rather, the man vested his style with his own individuality. Therefore when Your Kingdom Come was published, it went out to readers long familiar with that style and therefore able to say whether or not his messages read like messages coming from Conan Doyle. It was Eagle used were fluent and wonderfully expressive, now they are few and clumsy, as of one too reserved to make open gestures. The very phrasing is changed, it is that of one with mastery over words. Neither is the speech broken or sentences clipped, as it was with White Eagle. There has come the burr of a northerner. It is the voice of one from far places, broken and amazed, but gradually gaining in power. Yes. 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 I am coming, I am coming. Yes. Thank God. What a gathering. The speaker seemed to see or realize the presence of some concourse of beings of brightness and splendor unseen by the people present. I seem to be among a great company of friends. The light is very bright, this is grand, grand. Speak. Speak to me. A murmur of voices, we welcome you, Arthur speaks to you again. My wife. Here a portion of the record is omitted. Thank God. God bless you. I am here, I am here. You must forgive my emotion. It is not like me to feel emotion, but it is so marvelous to speak with you all again. You do not, you cannot, understand what all this means. I have come back. Yes, it is all coming to me now. I have spoken, of course I have spoken before, but not with power. I have passed through some wonderful experiences. I want to tell you, I want to tell you all about them. It is difficult. Yes, I have heard you calling me. At such times I have been close, and yet there has been some barrier. Now at last I have been given power. But I must keep calm, for I have a definite message to give. My friends, will you therefore follow what I say with close attention? I would thank all those who have helped me. I seemed to be very puzzled when I first realized where I was. My one desire was to get back then, and then. Oh, there is so much to explain, so much to tell you. I have been to my home, I have been in my home, I have seen my dear ones. What is it which has prevented me from doing all that I intended? I see a mission before me. I have to give a message to you all. It is difficult. The figure of mine Esther lay back apparently completely exhausted. For a while it seemed the speaker had lost his control. With growing apprehension the group watched her. Was this the end? The minutes slipped away, 5, 10, 15. When the voice spoke again there was more than a timbre of White Eagle in the speech, as if he also was supporting the medium. Presently the voice gained confidence. I am still here. Gathering power so that I can speak with you further. No, I have not left you. But I got confused, although I have learned a considerable amount about the process of manifestation from the other side of life. Much that is erroneous must be cleared away. I see now that there is a part of me which can manifest to a slight degree in various places and under various conditions. I see now that some of the phenomena of spiritualism are attributable to astral projection and astral memories. Thus it is possible for a sensitive or medium to pick up these astral memories which have been registered in certain places and conditions of thought, and which can be represented to the people of Earth as coming from a spirit being. There have already been a variety of communications of this sort as from myself, but not always projected consciously from me. I so desire to clear up this point. I have passed through what you know as the astral life, and have now been cleared from the conditions which were hampering my work. To clear a soul of the astral vibrations is not altogether an easy matter, but do not be misguided with regard to this state, it is a necessary evil. To be freed from these astral ties does not sever a man from those he loves, but it sets free his spirit and allows him to enter into the full realization of his own nature. You do not know the true selves of one another as you will when you pass into the illimitable consciousness of God, and the same material ties which bind you down here to the earth will still bind your soul when you leave the earth, condition, until you wake to the glory of Goddess Love. This perhaps refers to the many communications claiming to come from Arthur Conan Doyle, which the Post brought almost daily to Lady Conan Doyle at that time. Page 56. By this we mean a loosening of the personal and an entering into the impersonal consciousness of the creative essence which man calls God, and in that consciousness a realization of the perfectness of all those you love.